From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of December, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, the CME Group expects to begin settling the price of oats from the electronic platform only later this month, abandoning the decades-long open outcry price. An Office of the Inspector General report has called for strengthening U.S. EPA's regulatory powers, and a U.S. trade rep says the Obama administration would like to quickly wrap up talks with Pacific Rim nations. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories later in the half hour. And then Brad Schwab from the Illinois State Statistician's Office, that belongs to the United States Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service, will be here to tell us how all those stats are put together. Mr. Schwab was on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits throughout the week last week. And as we close out our program today, we'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, about the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. The nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat, 8 cents up at $6.07¾. July at $6.43¾, up 7¾. The hard red in Kansas City, a gain of 9¼ cents to settle at $6.83¾. March corn on the afternoon at $6.07, up 6 cents. May futures 6.15¾, 6 higher. July at 6.22¼, up 6. And the September corn at $5.84½, 3½ higher. December futures, new crop at $5.63½, up 4½ cents. January soybeans, 7½ cents the gain, $11.44½ the settlement price. The March at $11.54½, up 7¾ cents. May futures in the bean pit at $11.64¾, up 7½. July at $11.74¾, 7½ higher. And November beans of next year, an 8¼ cent gain at $11.66½. Bean meal up $2.20 at $2.95.20. Bean oil at $49.38, 33 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the February's at $120.65, down 85 cents. January feeders at $144.32½, down 35. And lean hogs at $84.10, down 25. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's how the outside market settled on this Tuesday afternoon. January crude oil futures at $97.22 a barrel, $3.34 higher. Ethanol at $2.14, up 2⅛ of a cent. Natural gas at $3.14 1/8 of a cent, 5⅔ higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel up 7⅓ at $2.85¼. And the gold futures on the day at $1,615.60 an ounce, $21.20 higher. The Dow at 12,094, just about 329 points higher, and the dollar at 79.89, down 0.35 for the day. The CRB index at 301.67, 5.85 higher. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon yet. Showers will remain likely. It'll be cloudy with a high of 43. East winds at about 8 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation today at 70% in the Urbana-Champaign area. Rain likely this evening. It'll be cloudy still with a low of 44, or rather just 40 degrees. East winds at 5 to 8. Chance of precipitation this evening at 70%. Wednesday, a 50% chance of rain before noon. Cloudy, a high of 47. West winds at 5 to 13, gusting to 16. And Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 34 degrees with a west wind at 3 to 7 miles an hour. Partly sunny skies on Thursday, a high near 44. Northwest winds at 3 to 10. Thursday night, cloudy and 31. Friday, cloudy and 37. Friday night, mostly cloudy and 26. On Saturday, partly sunny with a high of 36 degrees. Saturday night, Santa Claus will ride into a 25-degree weather in the area. It'll be partly cloudy. And on Christmas Day, mostly sunny, a high near 35 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy, a low of 22. And on Monday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high near 34. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather. He is in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line today, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Merry Christmas to you, Wayne.
Well, Merry Christmas to you and all the listeners out there, Todd.
Absolutely. As we make our way through the last couple of weeks of the trading calendar year, what's your best advice for a producer that raises corn, soybeans, and wheat?
Well, you know, we've been talking all along. We were looking for a little into Christmas rally or a Santa Claus rally, whatever you want to call it. And I think we're going to be able to get it here. A lot of this is being caused by two things. Number one, the dry weather in South America. And number two, a little better readings out of the European economic outlook with the German rate or their rating going up 1 percentage point there today, with the Italian bonds selling a little bit better, and the housing starts doing a little bit better this month. So a little better economic outlook, and we popped up a little bit. You know, we closed above that 605 mark in the March corn, which was our resistance on the top side, so this opens up the top a little bit there. Some of the advisory firms possibly got stopped out of part of their short December 12 corn today. So a little bit of strength and into Christmas and maybe just a little past in the new year if the weather forecast stays dry.
If we are able to hold above the $6 level and make our run to, what, 620, 625 or something along those lines, are you a seller of old and new crop corn?
Yes.
That was easy enough, wasn't it? Why?
Why? In the long-term outlook, as we look here, you know, we've got some short-term good news out of South America as far as the crop size maybe going down a little bit. But for right now, we have to think that the world economic situation and the number of acres we have projected to plant this spring for world production say we're not in a – it's going to be an oversupplied market again for next year, and we could run into some other problems. Now, of course, there's white swans out there that come along. They call it bad weather in different places, you know, better economic outlooks. And we're not saying sell the whole farm. You asked if we would sell some, and we definitely would be making some sales in the 620 to 640 bracket.
And how about for soybeans?
Soybeans, we'd like to see them up over 1150 basis the January. You know, we think that maybe they could go up in that 1170 bracket.
When you take a look at the charts and you think about where the marketplace has been over the last 4 years, the average monthly average for corn is much lower than I suppose many would suspect. I think around $4.30 or something along those lines. So it's much lower than where we are today. And I've asked this question a couple of times on Commodity Week last week, but what do you think is the definition of cheap corn? And I didn't quite ask it that way, but I asked whether they thought current price for corn was cheap or not. And I'd like your answer to the same question.
Well, cheap is all relative, Todd. That's the why it's a hard question to answer, because I would have thought when we were up above $7 that $6 corn would seem cheap to ethanol production plants and the Chinese people at that point in time. Unfortunately, it didn't seem to be that way, and we did not see the big added push to buy corn or to stabilize it here for quite a while. So, you know, like I say, it's all relative. When we first got to $5, we thought that was a tremendous price on corn. And here we are sitting at $6, and we're feeling disappointed. And that's a dollar above there. So it's all relative, but I think that a cheap corn is probably going to be down anything $5 or less if we have good growing conditions.
You think that's both for old and new crop then?
Well, you know, it's going to take a while. We're going to have to get the corn in the ground and get it popped up to get down to that level. And I'm not saying we're going to fall there for sure, but there's sure the possibility. You know, if we could end up with a possibility of a 1.5 to 2 billion bushel carryover, if all the weather conditions line up and are right, you know, that's a possibility. And then we could see corn a dollar less than where it is here.
Yeah, so we could easily double the amount of corn we're carrying over from 1 year to the next.
Yeah.
No, that's a lot of corn. Fairly
that's
quickly.
That's a lot
isn't it?
Of corn. We've got to grind a lot to ethanol and feed a lot of cattle.
Have you seen a couple of numbers? Speaking of feeding to cattle, did you see the report? And I think it came out of USDA, but I haven't been able to nail down exactly where it came from. That was explaining DDGs and how much replacement there might be actually in a bushel of corn that is converted to ethanol, and what that came out as DDGs and feedstock?
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to plead
okay. Well,
I will talk.
I'll talk about that and do some explanation on it after I get a chance to see it. But there apparently is some numbers out there that help to explain some of the feed and residual figures being so low, because the DDGs are actually much bigger than had been first expected. And I think that's a USDA report, but I haven't been able to confirm that report and find it just yet. So we'll go back and take a look at that. Anything else that we ought to take up before I let you go for the day?
We just want to wish all the listeners a very Merry Christmas and all the best wishes for the new year. Hopefully we'll talk to you again before the new year comes. But just it's been a good year for farmers, and I think that it's just a time to maybe reflect a little bit and say, you know, maybe I want to lock in a little bit of corn here for next year before the prices do possibly go down if we do have a good spring.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Tuesday afternoon. We should talk with him again next week. I probably ought to talk about our schedule as we make our way through the holiday season. We'll be on the Closing Market Report each and every day through the holiday season. So if you want to pick us up, you can. And we should be here every day with the exception of maybe the Mondays on next Monday and the following one, depending on which of the radio stations you happen to be listening to. So on our home radio station, I don't think we'll be here on the first Monday. We should be here on the second Monday. But on some of the rest of them, you might be able to hear us, and we'll put Commodity Week together for you. I know that coming up this week, I told you last weekend that we were going to talk with Daryl Good. I had a conversation with him at the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. So we'll have Daryl on for this week's Commodity Week, along with Gary Schnitke and Bruce Sherrick. They'll be talking about price of commodities, of course, and then looking forward to some of the changes in your crop insurance policies, and also stress testing your test at your farm at $5 corn and $10.50 soybeans, and what happens if prices actually fall below that. So you want to make sure that you listen up for that program. Commodity Week, of course, is our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture, and it comes to you on the weekends and on our line online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We post it at about 6 o'clock each and every Friday evening, recorded at 4:30 in the afternoons. This is WILLAG.org. You can find all of our programming, Commodity Week, the pre-opening market report, the opening closing market report, everything in between, anytime you'd like, right there.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
Hey, Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming, will be here in just a moment to take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon. I know that he and I both wish you the best of holiday seasons and that you stay safe in the 2012 calendar year. Dave's here now.
In agricultural news, the CME Group says that it will begin settling Chicago Board of Trade oats futures later this month solely on the basis of prices on its Globex electronic trading platform. Under current rules, oat futures are settled based on prices in the open outcry pit. The announcement comes 1 week after CME said that starting in the spring of 2012, it would add electronic trading as part of the basis for settling the closing prices for most agricultural futures, including grains, oil seeds, and livestock. That move sparked uproar among floor traders, many of whom thrive on the final hectic minute of pit trading used to set end-of-day prices. Despite concerns from members of Congress and agricultural interest groups that EPA is expanding its authority, A new report says EPA is not doing enough to enforce environmental regulations, suggests EPA should centralize control of its resources by doing away with the system that divides the states into 10 regulatory regions. The idea runs contrary to what members of Congress have been saying throughout 2011, that states are better equipped to draft and enforce their own regulations. The OIG report said states have been inconsistent and have provided unequal environmental benefits to the public. The OIG recommends that EPA establish clear national lines of authority for enforcement, including centralizing authority of resources, canceling outdated guidance and policies, consolidating and clarifying enforcement policies, establishing benchmarks for state performance, and establishing a clear policy describing when and how EPA will intervene in states. Deputy U.S. Trade Representative Dimitrios Marantis says that the Obama administration shares with House Ways and Means Trade Subcommittee Chairman Kevin Brady, a Republican from Texas, the goal of quickly wrapping up trade talks with Pacific Rim nations. But Marantis adds the U.S. is not going to set, quote, artificial deadlines for concluding negotiations on a Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Brady early recommended that the administration wrap up the talks by mid-2012 to enable Congress to vote on the pact before the November elections. General Mills is reporting that net income slipped 28% in the second quarter, pressured by rising costs, but revenue jumped by double digits. General Mills earned $444.8 million, or 67 cents per share. That's down from $613.9 million, or 92 cents per share a year earlier. Revenue rose 14%. And food maker Conagra Foods says its net income fell nearly 15% as high food costs continue to pressure results. Conagra is dealing with higher costs for ingredients, packaging, and fuel. Net income fell to $171.8 million, or 41 cents per share. That compares with $200.9 million, or 46 cents per share a year ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week in the Illinois Farm Economic Summits that took place last week, and the Corn and Soybean Classic Series that will take place in the month of January. If you have yet to sign up for that event, please do visit their website at cropsciconferences.com. Dave Dickey will be on the road in the month of January as well, on the 16th, the 17th, and 18th. I'll be out of the office and not on the radio program. Dave will be doing double duty. He will be on the radio doing the closing market report for me and his opening and pre-opening market reports in the morning. And then in the evenings, he'll be in Remington, Indiana, and in Taylorville, Illinois, and in Pontiac, Illinois, on the 16th, the 17th, and 18th. You can find all those dates and the Ag Outlook programming that Dave will talk about in the coming weeks on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Now up next, from the Illinois Farm Economic Summits last week, I spoke with Brad Schwab. He's the statistician in Illinois for NASS and takes care of putting together all of those USDA reports that come out of the state. And we'll have an update on just how they're compiled. Brad, you made a presentation in December at the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You were gathering at that point the final yield data for the 2011 crop year. Tell me how that process works.
Well, we're currently surveying about 3,000 Illinois farmers, and at this point we have been setting yields through the month of November, and now this will be going into the final annual production report on January 12th. So the Illinois farmers will fill out a survey form and give us their final yields for the year, not only for corn but for soybeans. They'll also report any grains that they have in storage.
How does this particular report differ from earlier crop production reports?
The earlier reports for August and September, for example, many of the farmers had not harvested their crops yet, so they were giving us their projections of what they thought their yields were going to be versus now they have already put the grain in the bin and they have their scale tickets and will be able to give us exact numbers of what the yields were.
Those reports that are due out in January come out which day?
On January 12th.
And they are compiled not only in the state of Illinois, but in other states and then by Washington, D.C.?
That's correct. There will be a national release that morning at 8:30 Eastern time, and those numbers then will become available to the public.
How's data collection been done, and how accurate has it been over time?
Well, we just celebrated 150 years, and that being said, at the USDA level, the fundamentals of statistics and how we set our estimates has not changed over those years. I mean, the tools that we use have speeded up the process. But when we sample farmers, it's very important that they all report their information to us so that we can ensure that the accuracy of the estimates will be there as they were designed.
Is their data information private?
Absolutely. It's protected by law, and when they report to us, we can assure them of that fact, that it will not be disclosed to the public. Not even a Freedom of Information Act can gain access to it.
Have you updated the way you collect data over time? For instance, I know you do phone and you do by mail, but do you also do other types of data collection, satellite, other things that weren't available in the earlier years?
Well, one example would be that we now have our surveys on the Internet so that the farmer can go out on his computer and put in his unique ID and fill out the form online without even intervention from our office. But two, the satellite imagery that we use allows us to have access to acreages so that we can use that information when we set county estimates. But we're also in the process of experimenting with vegetative indices and using that information to help estimate what yields are going to be early in the growing season.
Why not just use the FSA numbers? Data is collected on many farms and commodities by the Farm Service Agency.
Well, most farmers would prefer that they only had to report once to the FSA office, but the reason why we cannot use the FSA data exclusively is because of the timing of our surveys. We start doing surveys on acreage well in advance of when farmers are required to report their certified acreage to the FSA office. That being said, though, we do use that information in October to true up our acreage estimates and also for our county estimate numbers in when we're setting those in January and February. We'll then take advantage of those of that data that the farmers has reported to the FSA office.
How are the grain stocks and feed and residual usage numbers calculated?
Well, every quarter we do basically two surveys. One is for on-farm grain stocks where we ask farmers to give us what they have in storage, and then we contact elevators for the off-farm portion of that. And they're combined together, and that's how we come up with our quarterly numbers.
One final question. Can you tell us a bit more about the Census of Agriculture?
The Census of Agriculture we do every 5 years will be coming up in 2012. That will be the reference year. And next December in 2012, we will be mailing out roughly 2 million forms nationwide to farmers to fill out.
Brad Schwab is with the Illinois Office of the National Agricultural Statistics Service. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/FarmerView.
In just a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk with Don Day of Day Weather about the agricultural weather forecast. Some of you will be here with us, but the rest of you will say so long for now. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow for the Closing Market Report.
It's National Sangria Day. It's also St. Dominic of Silos Day, patron of shepherds. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first successful cotton spinning machine built using American resources began in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Samuel Slater was the first in the U.S. to reliably duplicate cotton spinning machines. Slater had immigrated secretly from England in 1789 with details of Richard Arkwright's machines memorized while an apprentice in a mill. In 1868, Harvey Samuel Firestone was born. An American industrialist, he started the Firestone Tire and Rubber Company in 1900. In 1906, he teamed up with Henry Ford to provide tires for the Model T. By the 1930s, nearly a quarter of all tires used in the U.S. came from Firestone. His innovations included non-skid tire treads, low-pressure balloon tires, and farm tractor tires. In 1879, Thomas Edison privately demonstrated his incandescent light at Menlo Park, New Jersey. Edison found that cotton filaments could operate for 40 hours inside a glass bulb vacuum. And in 1928, Harry Ramsden opened what would become eventually one of the most famous fish and chips restaurants in the world. The business began in a wooden hut, which still stands today alongside the main restaurant, which seats 250 people. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming is with us to take up the agricultural weather forecast. I think we probably better start in South America where it has been dry, and that moved the market a bit yesterday. What kind of conditions are they working under today?
Well, we might see markets move a little bit more on it, as the latest forecast is dry across many areas of South America. This is especially true in Argentina. It's not a completely dry forecast over the next week to 10 days, but amounts of rain are going to end up short of where they should be this time of year, and conditions are going to be more often than not dry. So it's a forecast that is definitely still trending dry down in the southern hemisphere, at least when it comes to Argentina and Brazil.
When you look back over time, they started out in a really good shape at the beginning of the growing season. When did their dry period start developing?
Well, it's fairly recent, within the last 2 or 3 weeks. And if you look at the soil moisture profiles in South America, yeah, they're a little bit drier than normal. Things have dried out a little bit, but we don't have excessive dryness yet. So from the standpoint of how long this has gone on, not too long. I don't think we're at a critical stage yet, but we'll certainly be watching it.
And then turn your attention to other parts of the world. What do you find across the planet in the southern hemisphere?
Well, it looks pretty dry. This is also true in Australia. Australia trending a little bit drier as well. There's some rain forecasted for the eastern areas, but most of Australia looking dry. As we go over into South Africa, looking at their precipitation chances, they're a bit better off. South Africa looking at some pretty good rain chances here over the next week.
At the end of the week, the man in the red suit will make his way around the United States and other parts of the world, too. I suppose we'd like to know whether we have snow to land on and where that might be.
Well, there will be a relatively, let's say, quiet weather pattern Christmas weekend across the nation. There's going to be more snow in the Rockies and High Plains as we get into the middle to the end of this week. We're going to have a little bit of winter weather along the East Coast, New England. I guess areas that may see a little bit of a wintry mix, at least closer to home, will be the Ohio Valley, the southern and eastern portions of the Midwest. As we get into Thursday night and Friday, some rain and snow will clip those eastern areas. But we don't have anything really big looming for Christmas weekend.
And how about the following week as we close out 2011?
Well, 2011 is going to go out probably about as it should. There is going to be a couple of quick-moving storm systems across the northern tier of the U.S. That could bring some light to moderate snows for the northern plains, Great Lakes, but nothing really big. The systems that are going to be traversing the United States over the next week or so, maybe the next 2 weeks, are going to move fairly quickly, and that'll keep us from anything too big.
You have a Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Likewise.
All right. Thanks so much, Don. Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.